Welcome everyone to the All About Windows Phone podcast. This is Insight number 238, recording this on 28th of November 2017, 2 weeks in a row with Mr. Rafe Blanford.
Yes, hello everybody, back for another podcast. And actually, we're recording this less than a week apart, so we've been very efficient, although I suspect the publish date will suggest that just a week's gone by. Now, we've got a good topic to talk about this week, kind of, I guess we'll inevitably touch on other topics, but we're going to have a bit of a focus this week, Steve.
Absolutely. We're going to be talking about Microsoft services and applications on other platforms, not because we're abandoning Windows 10 and Windows Phone.
Well, everyone else is,
No, don't be all controversial up front. But because we want to just genuinely be open-hearted, open-minded, and look at alternatives and look at the competition and look at how Microsoft is spreading its wings. There's a lot to talk about, I suspect, especially because Rafe's been using an iPhone as his main phone for quite a while now, and I've been dabbling with Android on and off all year. But before we get to that, I want to just fly the Windows flag high and strong and proud. I did an article, Rafe, because the best of the top 12 third-party universal Windows platform apps for Windows 10 Mobile. Basically, we've done these directories, these lists of all the different applications in the various categories, but there's still hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them, far less than the tens of thousands in the store, but there are hundreds and hundreds. Also, that list includes a lot of the old Windows Phone 8.1 applications and not just UWPs. So I did a list of my top 12, utterly subjective, but my top 12 UWP apps for Windows 10 Mobile. So I'll run them down very quickly, and you can pick out a couple of those that you also use, and then maybe you might have a suggestion of your own at the end. So just in no particular order, really, but I guess number one is the most important. Tweetium, I think, is the best Twitter client, even though it still doesn't support 280-character tweets, which is a bit annoying. I have been trying to contact them. I'm sure the update is in the works. Grover Pro, the best podcasting podcatching client at the moment, I think. Awesome Tube, my favourite YouTube client, if only because the previous favourite, MyTube, is having all sorts of playback problems. I think they're not quite optimising their stuff for the Windows phones at the moment. They may be optimising for the desktop. FeedLab, which is just about the only Feedly client that's UWP and works very well on my phones. GDrive.net, giving you access to Google Photos and Google Drive. Very, very slick indeed. Actually, give that one a try if you haven't already. Video X Player Pro, a very long-winded title for a media player, but of all the ones I've tried, it's A, UWP, and B, really, really fully featured, and once you get all your videos indexed, it's really fast, very slick. Just certainly give it a try. It's now become my de facto video player on my Alcatel Idol 4 Pro. Halfway through the list, ProShot, an alternative camera application with all sorts of extra modes. KeyPass Reader, I like this one because it lets you access all my secret information with just a touch on the fingerprint sensor, or I guess the iris recognition on the Lumias. So one bit of a biometric authentication later and you're banging into your, all your secret stuff. So that's KeyPass Reader. All of these are in, and links, of course, and links to the reviews are in the article. Number 9, OnePedia, a Wikipedia client. Really, really slick again. Number 10, Transcoder, a bit of a geeky utility, but I use it quite a lot to transcode different media, audio and video. And finally, Slack, which is a utterly cut-down version compared to Slack on other platforms, but at least it works. At least it's there and at least it's official, so I'm going to give it a name check. And finally, TaperShot, Taper Shop, if you look elsewhere in the store description, is kind of a low grade. It's a cut down Photoshop thing, utility for Windows 10 Mobile. The saving grace over dozens of other utilities which claim to add filters and effects and so forth is this outputs at full resolution, so you don't have to accept a 1 megapixel output after you've applied your effect. So Rafe, that's 12 good apps and true. Any particular favourites there from you?
Well, I think you've missed the most important one, which is the AAWP app.
That was my PS.
I suspect you were going to use that at the end. But yes, you've mentioned it in the list. I think it's incredibly sick. And okay, I'm a little bit biased, but as a way of consuming content, especially the things I know about the work it does to make things like tables and the photo comparisons and the photo shootouts kind of easy to use on mobile, I just think it's really impressive. If we're sticking with UWP apps, I actually think you probably listed most of them. I mean, the honest truth is I probably use less third-party apps now because I tend to use the 950 when I want to kind of have a great camera experience, when I kind of want to remind myself about Windows 10 Mobile, and to be quite honest, it doesn't match up with the third-party apps that I have on Android and iOS. But yeah, of the ones you mentioned, I mean, which ones would I pick out in particular? I'd probably agree with FeedLab, YouTube. Yeah, I just go via the browser for that now. Slack, do use that from a work point of view. And yeah, I guess for podcasts, I mean, I've had several in there. Grover Pro, yeah, it is one of the best ones out there. Trying to think about things that aren't on your list. It's actually, there are some utility type apps which I use, some geocaching, but I don't believe those are UWP. I have used a remote desktop. That's more for work reasons than anything else. When I was still carrying around a Fitbit, I was really impressed by their application.
Yeah.
They did a great job with their UWP app. And I was using one of the other password managers, and I can't remember what it was. It's something like Master Password or similar naming convention to that. And then there's a couple of weather applications as well. But as I say, I think you've probably got the core ones there. I guess actually from an all about point of view, I've also used the Discuss app to kind of keep track of comments and sort of moderation, do that sort of thing. And I think that's a pretty strong app as well. You know, kind of the thought and the attention to detail that's been paid to that is really very impressive indeed. I guess it's a cop-out choosing any of the Microsoft applications, but things like Skype and Microsoft Teams, if you're using it for work reasons, yeah, they're good too. So that's probably a good enough list to keep people busy.
Yeah, absolutely. And this was specifically a third-party list, because I absolutely acknowledge that some of the Microsoft properties like Word and Excel and Skype and Outlook and so forth, there's quite a few of them, they're all first-party and they all work really well. And if you're coming to Windows 10 Mobile as your secondary phone, which you are at the moment, then you probably switch to it because you want to use those Microsoft apps on its own platform rather than fiddle around with third-party apps. So yeah, I absolutely understand.
Yeah, I mean, actually, what I'd say is the third-party apps, I basically don't touch very much apart from kind of the, I guess it's a convenience factor, but I do tend to use it if I'm keeping up with work stuff. And there's a certain few things that are essential, and you mentioned Office. I kind of mentioned Skype as it's something I kind of had to make a bit more of an effort to get installed. And frankly, there's so many updates to it as well. And there's a few other ones in there around, I think, To-Do as well as a relatively recent one that's kind of grown out of Wunderlist. I guess we might talk about that a little bit later. But yeah, you're right. It's probably the built-in applications and, you know, that first-party experience is still second to none on Windows 10 Mobile. Although, as I guess we're going to discuss, Microsoft has been putting great efforts into Android and iOS as well.
Now, I have a phone in front of me, Rafe. It happens to be an Honor 6X, an Android phone, but I'm going to long press the home button and we'll see what happens. What's your name?
Cortana is my one and only name.
There we are. So this is Cortana fully integrated into the Honor 6X. What I wanted to do, and I did this about 2 weeks ago, and I did a feature which we'll link to in the show notes. I loaded up every single Microsoft service I use on Windows 10 Mobile using the exact same application, or as near as damn it, on Android, because Microsoft has made their programs available for all the three major platforms now. And before I go into my experiences of just how well or how badly or how integrated it all feels, I wanted to go with perhaps what is many people have said in the comments to my article is perhaps the more important aspect, which is how Microsoft services and apps run on the iPhone, because as many people have pointed out, Android tends to sell to, you know, away from the geek higher end, an awful lot of Android stuff tends to be at the low and middle range, where people aren't necessarily as interested in loading up the applications and services from Microsoft. Whereas at the top end, especially in America, Microsoft's an American company, and people might well want to use all of their Microsoft stuff to integrate with their Office applications, their Office setup on their iPhone. In America, a lot of people have iPhones because of the subsidized model, etc., etc. So, before I go ahead with my feelings on Android, how have you been getting on with using an iPhone for your last, I don't know, 9 months to a year, and more specifically with some of the Microsoft services you used to use on Windows Phone, you're now using on an iPhone? So how's that been working for you?
It's a great question, and actually I think the answer is it works very well, and I think this is partly because Microsoft has put a lot of effort into developing applications for both iOS and Android. And, you know, it's done that actually through some acquisitions. So things like Wunderlist, which has sort of evolved into Microsoft to do Accompli, and Sunrise, which have both have gone into effectively Outlook. And then obviously it's really big, well-known applications from the Office suite. And, you know, Word, PowerPoint, Excel. I mean, the interesting thing is there's also a lot more on there in some ways, sometimes more or certainly more up to date than you get on Windows 10 Mobile. So if you look at things like Sway, there's a good version of Office Lens as well, which has had more recent updates than on the Windows platform. You know, OneNote, you've got Visio Viewer. You've also got things like Teams and Groups. All of the things that kind of tie into the Office 365 platform. But I thought, as we were kind of discussing this podcast, I think probably the most telling thing, if I look at the home screen of my iPhone and I'm looking at the first screen of the launcher, there's obviously a number of apps from Apple, kind of the default ones, but actually, surprisingly, I've moved an awful lot of them off the home screen. Then there's kind of the ones you might expect in terms of social from Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. There's a couple from Google in terms of Gmail, Google Maps, Google Photos. But actually, more than anything else, there's a bit of domination from Microsoft. In fact, Microsoft and WhatsApp are the two third-party apps that make it onto kind of the main launcher bar, if you like. So they're ever-present, along with Camera and Safari as the browser. But then I've also got Skype for Business, which use a lot in work, To-Do, which is kind of a way of, I've been using that as keeping track of to-dos recently. It's actually a pretty decent application. I also actually have Skype because some of the communications happen that way. And then obviously there's also a couple of the productivity ones I mentioned, kind of Word and Excel, that actually managed to make it onto my front screen. It's probably a reflection of how Microsoft heavy my work life is, but I don't, you know, obviously that's an anecdotal one, but I think that's probably pretty common that a lot of people are using Microsoft applications. And so in terms of kind of time, if you exclude the browser, which actually I do switch between Safari and Chrome, I suspect I probably spend more time in Microsoft applications on the iPhone than I do in any other vendor, probably including Apple, as I say, particularly if you exclude the browser, because obviously yeah. Outlook and then the productivity apps are very heavy. And that is obviously more from a work point of view than entertainment or content. And actually, you have to get onto my third screen to kind of see my folders where I have a content one, that where Netflix and everything else like that lives. But then there is actually a Microsoft folder that contains all of these kind of the second tier of applications. But I think the thing is, Microsoft knows how to create a really great mobile application. Actually, the consistency that you get between its applications and then the integration with things like OneDrive and then the integration for OneDrive into the Office applications is really second to none. They've really thought about it. I think perhaps the best example of that is Outlook, which I would argue is one of the best kind of mobile email clients out there. I mean, the fact that, you know, obviously it supports Exchange as you'd expect it to, but then you can also set it up very easily to do things like Gmail and some of the other providers as well. Obviously, it's set up to do Outlook and Hotmail very easily as well. But the fact it sort of builds in support for things like Groups, it's got very good folder support. It sort of does the focused inbox that you see on Outlook on the web and other. And so, and then the kind of the filtering, the rules, kind of obviously it does calendar as well. But then it's, you know, relatively recently, or it's added the file support. So good integration into things like OneDrive and Box, also Dropbox and Google Drive. There's a whole bunch you can add, actually. That makes it, if you're having email attachments go back and forth, very easy to use. And then obviously it also kind of ties into kind of a people or a contacts list. I'm, you know, maybe it's because I've got familiar using it elsewhere, and it's partly in web, partly on the desktop, and obviously from Outlook on Windows 10 Mobile as well. Just for me, they've done a good job of that, better actually than the built-in mail application. I would say the one exception in terms of really good mobile email experience, if you are a regular user of Gmail and all your accounts in Gmail, actually the Gmail mobile app is very, very good as well. That's continued to be developed, sort of in contrast to the webmail version, which I guess has stagnated a bit. But then when it comes down to it, I then get into Word, PowerPoint, and Excel. And whether I'm using it on a phone or a tablet, and I have a Office 365 subscription, so I kind of get the full versions and editing on whatever mobile or desktop or laptop device I'm on. Actually, you know, just getting stuff done on the move, the ability to update that Excel spreadsheet, write some notes in Word, you know, review a PowerPoint deck, it just works really well. And sadly, I think the thing is here for me that a lot of what used to make Windows Phone and subsequently Windows 10 Mobile special, actually I can do it on iOS, and then I get a lot of the other benefits of iOS, like, you know, the full Google suite of applications, which is something I always missed on Windows Phone. Obviously, the kind of Apple hardware design and way of doing things. Actually, as I said, not really using that many of the Apple applications, you know, the really good third-party support. You know, when you use an iPhone or an Android device regularly, I think you do notice the app gap more regularly, whether that's because Facebook's faster or there's more features in Instagram, or, you know, you're downloading games on a regular basis, or you've got your favorite apps, you know, be that something like TouchNote or OS Maps or, you know, whatever it happens to be, you'll be able to pick out something and it just works. And actually, probably the biggest category for me from a personal point of view is smart home stuff. So things like Alexa or Arlo or smart things, all of which have very good iOS and, to be fair, Android applications. What I would say is that I've got my Android device set up in a very similar way, and I probably wouldn't be too fussed about switching back and forth to that. Kind of, I guess what I'm saying is the, you know, the software platform, the operating system itself really doesn't matter that much to me. I say that, of course, there are some things like Live Tiles or the launcher that I do miss, and I think... You talk about the what was the Arrow launcher, now the Microsoft launcher on Android, does a pretty good job. But even that, it can still feel like a bit, not clunky exactly, but it's a workaround. Third-party launches on Android, I guess, probably best described as an acquired taste. And, you know, similarly, using Cortana on either iOS or Android, depending on the device you're on, it may or may not be seamlessly integrated. It does have a nasty habit of being killed in the background. And there's not really anything Microsoft can do about that. So some of those deeper bits of platform integration you don't get, and you don't get Live Tiles, which I still miss. I mean, I still think that is the most elegant way to do a kind of a start or a launcher screen, that combination of widgets with information on them and a quick app launcher. You know, I still find it a bit clunky launching apps on iOS and Android by comparison. But it's kind of a long-winded answer to your question, but I think probably if someone observed me using iOS or Android, they would note, as I say, that a lot of my time is in Microsoft. Now, that partly reflects work world. If you're talking about consumer, completely different story. But maybe that's because I've come from the Windows 10 mobile background. But even so, I think it's a pretty compelling anecdote.
Yeah, your comments there on the Live Tiles and the start screen on Windows 10 Mobile and missing them are quite appropriate, really. I mean, I've having great fun setting up a start screen all over again with this Alcatel Idol 4 Pro that I've got back in. Just to give you an idea of what that is fitted in on this Windows 10 Mobile device, I'll just run through this without a breath. Tweetium Gmail, Phone, Edge, Messaging, Groove Music, the X Player, Media Player, Netflix, People, Calendar, Fitbit, Microsoft Store, KeePass Reader, I don't know what that app is, Groove, My App Free. There's one where I can't make out the head or tail of what it is. GMaps Pro, Sigic Navigation, Windows 10 Maps, International Snooker Pro, Photos, Awesome Chew, Grover Pro, and the 3-day weather forecast. All of that is just on the first page of my start screen on my phone. And it's all animated and nicely presented, nice colours on the AMOLED screen. And it is, you're absolutely right, I do miss that. And I know you can get kind of Live Tile alike, start screen alike launches for Android, for example, to make you feel at home. But that's missing the point, really, because it doesn't work in the same way. I think if you're going to go to another platform, you go with the launcher for that platform and make everything holistically the same. Yeah.
And I think the thing is about Live Tiles is the fact that they're tied in at a system level and developers are encouraged to create them for all applications. So, you know, on iOS and Android, you know, you'll get between 20 and 35 or even 40 on some of the larger screen devices icons that you can see, but they're almost all kind of static. And where you do have the widget support, as on Android or indeed on the kind of iOS today screen, it just feels like you can't fit quite so much in. And maybe it's more of a perception thing, but it just feels like the density of information versus the usability of being able to open applications, it's something that Microsoft's absolutely nailed with Live Tiles. And it was sort of a simple elegance about it, which I just haven't seen matched anywhere else. And of course, you get used to what else is offered, and notifications arguably are done better on the other platforms, or there's other solutions. But just as that one single thing, and then, as I say, the time with things like Cortana, I mean, there are equivalents. So you've got Siri, or you've got Google Assistant, and whatever else. But I think of all the things from Windows 10 Mobile, it is the start screen that I would love to somehow get back on. I mean, it wouldn't, you're right, though, it wouldn't fit because it's kind of part of a whole. But yeah, that's that's the biggest burden I have to carry, having switched it for my primary device.
Yeah, so on this Android phone, I've got the Microsoft launcher you mentioned earlier, which it just feels like another Android launcher, really. And across the left, where you might normally have little Google cards and Google Now, you've got some Microsoft giving some news and some recent activities. It's all pretty much meh. But I get the impression that Microsoft are still tweaking this launcher. There are certainly updates quite regularly. I mentioned Cortana. Yes, on Android, of course, you can long press the home control to get Cortana quite easily. Wait, what's the equivalent on iPhone? Is there some sort of button press you can do, or can you say hi, hey Cortana?
You don't get the kind of the trigger word, and I don't think you can set it up on a particular key, so you end up having it as an application. Something I've used, because actually, frankly, all the voice assistants at one point do pretty much the same thing. But I can look into it, and I'll report back in a future podcast, because I do have the Cortana application sitting on the iPhone. In fact, I'll try and find out as we're talking.
Okay, well, in terms of the rest of the interface, I've got it set up. I mean, the Microsoft launcher allows you a pretty standard grid of static icons and widgets, which you can just populate as you normally would on Android. But I was specifically trying to make this into a Microsoft phone, as it were. So, again, I'm going to run down a list of applications rather fast. This is all on the home screen number one on this Microsoft-ified Android phone. So Microsoft Selfie, Camera Cortana, Microsoft Launcher Settings, Microsoft To Do, Translator, Bing Wallpaper, LinkedIn. And if I swipe up the dock at the bottom, which itself has Microsoft Edge and Outlook, the Microsoft Launcher allows you two rows of dock icons, not just the one. And that immediately adds in Skype, Word, OneNote, Groove Music, and OneDrive. So that's a pretty impressive suite of applications, and they all bring in information and services from the cloud in exactly the same way they would on Windows 10 Mobile. I don't think at this stage, Rafe, we're even at the point where we're going to say that anyone who's got a Windows 10 Mobile phone and wants to switch to using a particular Android phone, I don't think they'll have any trouble whatsoever in terms of losing anything. It's more a question of do they want to stay within the Windows 10 Mobile interface, which is, let's face it, quite elegant and beautiful in places, and that start screen is genuinely useful. There's a lot to like. At the same time, you've mentioned all the other benefits of going with iOS and Android and getting a far larger ecosystem, but I don't think anyone need fear jumping platform and missing out on something fundamental.
I know, I think that's right, particularly when you focus it in a more app-centric way, which after all I think is probably where a lot of the value is, because it's probably fair to say that almost all of the applications have equivalent versions, and a lot of them actually have a few more features. Where you sometimes lose out is with the kind of deeper integration with the system. So you know, something like Maps is a kind of a good example, and there isn't really an equivalent for Android and iOS there. But, you know, you could expect it to open as your default thing, or the browser, you know, obviously you're going to be away from Edge. Those two really don't matter for me. When you're dealing with kind of Word and Excel documents, depending on the exact setup, you'll be able to have them open from email into the Word and Excel applications. You know, Microsoft has done their homework to make the sort of, I guess it's the document handling and the links work there. So now I'm struggling to think of something where you go really miss out. It goes back to that overall thing about the kind of UI or the experience of the platform itself. And honestly, for me, that's always what Windows Phone and latterly Windows 10 Mobile had going for it. It was the fact it was actually easy to use. I mean, some people kind of denigrated saying it was a feature phone or it wasn't a proper smartphone operating system. I kind of think that missed the point. Actually, the elegance and the simplicity of it, I mean, maybe it was easier because it was doing less, was kind of the point. That's what made it attractive. And actually, the well-thought-out kind of UX and the way you move through things And that was from live tiles to the launcher. Even you know, the way kind of Metro as a design language kind of flowed through the whole platform, and developers were really encouraged to adopt it. I mean, I think you've seen that kind of pattern be adopted more strongly on Android in particular. iOS was also always good in that sense, but actually both of them have moved towards a Metro-like thing, and certainly in terms of flatness, some of the big high-level principles. But actually it was that tightness of live tiles into the apps, things like the way even notifications were presented, you know, the swipe downs. And it, I don't know, I guess it just felt like a cohesive whole. I think probably that's someone speaking who used it was very familiar with it. But just that whole sense, that's what you don't get. What, you know, in terms of functions, in terms of being able to do things, yeah, absolutely. You get the replication. And I dare I say it, it's even better because you get often some additional applications. You obviously get the chance to use all the other applications on the platform as well, all the other features. And so arguably you get a more feature rich overall experience. What you perhaps miss out from is that cohesiveness that I think Windows Phone and Microsoft honestly didn't receive enough credit for. I mean, I think, you know, Android is incredibly powerful as a mobile operating system. The ability to tweak it and really change it, I mean, honestly, it reminds me of kind of Windows 95 and kind of that era where everybody, you know, really liked it. I guess, you know, it's Linux as well, that kind of sense. It's more for geeks. It's not that, it's just, it's what everyone uses, the very way that Google approaches it being open. There's a, you know, you get manufacturers customizing it and all of that, but that almost comes at a cost that sometimes it doesn't feel particularly consistent, particularly when you switch between different manufacturer devices. And I think Google perhaps hasn't dealt with the evolution of the platform as well as it might. It's not that it's bloat, it's just some things feel a bit more bolted on. Honestly, I feel in some ways the same things happened to iOS. I mean, it's gone through obviously a lot of redesigns as well, but some things don't feel like it's part of a cohesive whole. You know, whether it's with the way kind of notifications happened or even the today screen, the lock screen in it, it's all gone through evolutions that sometimes, you know, it just doesn't have quite that consistency. And also, I guess, some of the ways that the design language is enforced. I mean, that's partly down to third-party developers, of course, but that's also something that kind of centrally or is encouraged by the platform itself. And so I guess it's my way of saying there's still a bit of a love letter or a fondness for me for Windows, just that gracefulness of approach. Now, I'd absolutely accept it got left behind. There were features missing and everything else. But there was still a core elegance that you won't get if you just install Microsoft applications or even the launcher on Android. So you do miss out on something. Can it do the same things? Yeah, absolutely it can. Honestly, it can do more as well. If you're sticking in kind of browser, the productivity applications, Outlook, maybe a few others, I think you'll be hard-pressed to make any complaints whatsoever. And actually, both Android and iOS are well set up for sort of having, you know, customizing it to get the application you want easily accessible, understanding the way they work, you know, because neither of them are difficult to use. I mean, that's the great thing about all smartphones now is, you know, they're so much easier to use, incredibly powerful, but actually the core thing hasn't really changed much. There's an app launcher, there's a home screen, you know, there's a lock screen, there's notifications, you jump into the apps, you kind of jump in between them, there's a browser for pretty much everything else. You know, email applications generally work in the same way. You know, there's cloud storage, there's much better syncing back and forth of data. Frankly, you can set up another device and have it running on your, you know, familiar set of applications, often with the same layout, in a matter of, you know, minutes or if not hours to do the sort of data and all of that sort of thing. And that's just an amazing step forward. I mean, it really is. And actually, it's probably testament to the fact that I do feel very able to switch between devices and not miss out on things, because actually a lot of the key content is synced back and forth or is sitting up on a server somewhere. And that is a change. But it comes back to what I said. First of all, in some ways, the value isn't really in the operating system. And I'm not even sure it's that much in the applications. They're kind of the table stakes. And yes, it's great to have them, and Microsoft does well having them. But actually, the value is kind of my data and the way I do things and the things that I want to use. You know, all the constituent parts are valuable and add up. But the fact that I'll be quite happy on iOS, I'll be quite happy on Android. Probably now I have to be honest and say Windows 10 Mobile, I wouldn't want to use as my primary device because I feel I'd miss out on too many things. But if another operating system came along, honestly, I'd probably be absolutely fine using that as well.
I'm actually, as I mentioned earlier, using the Alcatel Idol 4 Pro as my main phone, and I have done for a couple of weeks now, Rafe, which is actually surprised me. I thought I would find showstoppers, as I have been previously with the Lumia 950 XL, and, you know, and relegate it to my secondary. But it all comes back to hardware, actually, at the end of the day. People love the Lumia 950, 950 XL, and before that, the 913, 1520, 1020 for their great camera. And they were genuinely great cameras. They still are. The 950 is still arguably up with the very best in the world. The Idol 4 Pro, as I've mentioned several times in my reviews, has got the best speakers of any phone in the world, I would argue, right now, in terms of overall volume and fidelity. And it's just a treat to, you know, watch Netflix and YouTube and all my archive videos in spare moments with those stereo, loud, high-quality speakers pointing at me. Just a real treat. And for that reason, I don't keep thinking, oh, I'm on a Lumia 950. It's got a tinny speaker around the back. That's just, it doesn't cut it for me. So this time of year, Rafe, when the sun's, you know, not out that much and we're basically into winter gloom, then actually I actually spend more time, you know, huddled up watching things on my phone, and speakers are a bigger deal. In the spring and summer when the flowers are out and I want to be outside in the fresh air, then I think the camera is more important to me. But for me, it's a very much a seasonal thing. But at the moment, the Idol 4 Pro, even though it doesn't run Android, doesn't run iOS, Rafe, it is actually ticking all the boxes for me, and there's very little I can't do. But admittedly, I don't have a smart home.
That's interesting. Yeah, I mean, that kind of seasonality, I'd agree with in terms of what hardware features become important. It's a bit like if you're out in bright sunlight, a lot of the time, the quality of the screen or the polarization becomes, you know, kind of probably the most important thing. I guess it probably is the smart home and some of those services that have become important enough now for me that it's bothersome to do without them. And actually, it's also some of the work tools, you know. There is a good Slack client on Windows 10 Mobile. There's HipChat as well, but they're not quite as well integrated. The notifications don't work quite as well, it feels, at least as on iOS and Android. And then in terms of the tie-in for things like Skype for Business and what used to be known as Link, there's just a few things that are just a little bit more seamless on iOS and Android. But you're right about the hardware. It's funny because we've talked for years about how hardware has become a commoditized and it's all the same. But that doesn't mean that actually a hardware thing can't make it stand out. Because actually, I guess I'd argue that, you know, the software's got so good on iOS and Android, respectively. And honestly, for me, I think it comes down to what you're familiar with. You're either being one camp or the other. You then may make a decision about it based on their relative attributes, you know, Google's attitude to privacy versus Apple, or cloud versus non-cloud, or, you know, you don't like the fact that Apple feels like you're in a kind of walled garden and it's very expensive, all of which I think perfectly valid reasons. But it's interesting that it comes down to that rather than one is fundamentally better or worse than the other. It's kind of the principles or the attributes of the platform itself that tends to make people make the decision. But I think you're right, the hardware does become more important. Just because it's commoditized, it doesn't mean you can't be differentiated, or you can't sort of change the balance, because each phone makes a slightly different decision about which bit of hardware it optimizes or emphasizes over the other. So, you know, you've talked about the stereo speakers there being very important for you. For me, really doesn't matter. Don't really use the speakers on my phone very much. I'm much more likely to be wearing a headset or something like that. But I do care a lot about the camera and the quality of the screen. And so those things are important for me. And for other people, it'll be the look of the phone or the material, how easy it is to hold, how light it is. You know, for a lot of people, it's the kind of the screen size, as we've seen kind of increasingly a kind of little and large versions of all the flagship phones, you know, whether that's Pixel and Pixel XL, iPhone 8 and 8 Plus, Samsung 8, 8 Plus, and then kind of obviously the Note as well, and Huawei and Xiaomi all doing the same thing. So it's interesting. Actually, I guess probably now what would dictate what phone I would buy more probably is the hardware in some ways, despite the fact it's commoditized. Now, that probably is a peculiarity of typically buying a kind of a higher-end phone where you do get a choice. And actually, the balance of the equation that gets drawn there probably draws out some of those distinctions, where in the mid-tier, things do tend to cluster together and it you can modify. But even there, to some extent, you've still got choices. And as I say, you know, that actually, I guess people still will choose Android or iOS, but they're not choosing it because Android has feature X and iOS doesn't. They're choosing it because it's implemented in a certain way, or there's a principle that Google or Apple follows that they prefer. And often I think it's just down to the familiarity principle. I mean, in the same reason that people stayed on Windows Phone often where they may have had a better experience elsewhere, or this can be argued both ways. And it is very noticeable that kind of the cost of switching feels almost as high as it's ever been, not because you're particularly locked in data, although that can be the case, but, you know, with so many of the applications available on both, including all the services, it's actually the fact you have to get used to using a slightly different way of doing things. And if you're not regularly switching phones, that can, I guess, be somewhat onerous, even if in some ways iOS and Android are probably closer together than they were, you know, 5 years ago in terms of the look and feel and the way they do a lot of things. You know, there's a lot of jokes around about iOS kind of borrowing features from Android, but I think it happens the other way around too. I mean, hardware, it's probably more obvious with, you know, Samsung talking about whether it's wireless charging or whether it's waterproof. But I mean, the reality is you can make that accusation both ways. And I think the respective fans will continue to do so. But that's really, you know, a shortcut for the fact things are very similar between the two. You know, you amazingly powerful devices. And maybe I prefer to concentrate on that rather than which one I prefer.
Yeah, just to mention before we close this podcast, just as you mentioned hardware there, if people were to say, okay, I've had enough of Windows 10 Mobile, I do want to look at something else, I want to try my SIM in a phone on, let's start off with Android, maybe you can go with which iPhone they should buy. But on Android, I've been trying this week the OnePlus 5T, which is the latest budget flagship, as it calls. Yes, not a Lumion 830. I know that was the same tagline, but I'm calling this one a genuine budget flagship. A Snapdragon 835, 8 gigabytes of RAM, 128 gigabytes of storage. It's even got, Rafe, get this, it's copied a feature from Windows 10 Mobile in the interface of the OnePlus 5T, their version of Android. You can swipe up from the bottom of the screen and it removes the navigation controls to give you more content. Then when you want them back, you swipe up and the controls reappear. So it's almost identical to the use of Windows 10 Mobile and makes a big, big difference. So and it's less than £500, even for that higher spec model. So if someone's looking for the right Android phone to buy to try out Android and the Android interface and the Microsoft Launcher and Cortana and the Microsoft apps and services on that platform, then I think I'd recommend they would start with the OnePlus 5T. And that's $499 for the highest spec model. But I was really impressed. A, Rafe, have you seen that? And B, which iPhone should people buy if they wanted to play with iOS?
The OnePlus 5T is a great shout. I mean, I think actually OnePlus has done some good work and in all its models, but actually the 5T is probably the best they've done so far. I mean, other Android devices, I don't think you can really go wrong with the Pixel, but not the Pixel XL, probably, according to some of the people I've been talking to. And actually, you know, Samsung, it's hard to see beyond them in terms of kind of the flagship devices and kind of the support you get from them and all the accessories and kind of the ecosystem around it. But I probably would give a shout out to, you know, you've talked quite fondly about some of the Alcatel, if you're looking lower down market, some of the budget devices. I think Honor, in the same way, has made it a good name for itself in the UK. You start to have to worry about some of the manufacturer customizations. But yeah, on the iOS side, I mean, honestly, it's quite easy because it really depends how much money you want to spend. I would probably argue that in terms of kind of value for money, going N-1 on the iPhone model and getting last year's model probably gives you the best value for money in the short term. As in, you know, if you buy the iPhone 7 now, you're paying slightly less of a premium because all iPhones are expensive. No getting away from that. But I think there is definitely a frustration if you buy an iPhone of a kind of lower memory capacity and you can fill that up quite quickly by the time you've got a few downloads on it or have installed apps, of which, of course, there are hundreds of thousands. And so I do tend to recommend that, you know, if you're a serious smartphone user, 128 gigabyte model is something you want to look at. But of course, there is no expandable memory in the way that you typically can just put a memory card in the Android devices. So that can actually be a pretty big deal, and it's something you kind of need to think about up front. If you want the best of the best, I mean, the iPhone X at the moment, I mean, it's ruinously expensive in some ways, but you are getting kind of things that feels like a phone that's from a year ahead. And it's not, you know, the screen is one thing. I mean, I think honestly that's been done elsewhere in terms of sort of, even phones with kind of smaller bezels, but the removal of the home button, the fully thinking through of all those gestures, you know, that marriage up of kind of zero buttons, and that reflected in the software as well. iOS has probably done that better than I've seen on Android. But actually, I think the Face ID, the dual cameras, I would argue that the iPhone probably is the best, or certainly in the top two or three in terms of camera phones. I mean, we've seen it beat the Lumia 950. You put it up against something like the S8, and, you know, they're very close as well. But probably the iPhone just edges it, at least in part because there's a lot of the applications and some of the stuff that Apple has done around portrait mode. I just think it's hard to justify spending that much money on a phone. But if you're going for a flagship, you know, whether that's Samsung or Apple, you are looking at the £1,000 mark now for kind of top of the line, particularly if you get one of the bigger memory variants or one of the bigger screens. It would depend on who I was talking to. But actually, for a lot of people, looking at the iPhone 7, particularly if you sort of buy it with an intention to maybe upgrade it in a couple of years' time, if you're looking to have a slightly longer life cycle, sure, go for the iPhone 8. I mean, it's a really great question. If I had to just recommend one thing, I would probably say, in terms of the overall value, thinking about how long you're going to have it for, having the latest thing, it's probably going to have to be the iPhone 8 for me. But to be quite honest, everyone will have their personal preference on things like screen size. So they might want the Plus model, they might want a smaller phone. And actually the iPhone SE, as kind of a small screen smartphone, is probably the best small screen smartphone you can buy, frankly. And it's not until you hold one in your hand, you kind of appreciate just how much smaller it is than the kind of the standard smartphone. And for a lot of people, that's a really big deal. If you want, you know, the latest on the cutting edge, sure, go for the iPhone X. So I think I've managed to recommend pretty much every iPhone model currently available. So that was no answer at all.
Well, I can tell you're not a true iPhone enthusiast, because you said iPhone X rather than iPhone 10. But I'm letting that pass because most of the world is doing that. But I think I would recommend, because of the price of the iPhone. I mean, on the Android side, you can pick up an Android phone for £150, quite literally, one of the Wily Foxes, equip it with all the Microsoft stuff, and you are basically off to the races. In the iPhone world, I would recommend, if people are not sure about spending £1,000, go look on the secondhand forums, look on eBay, and go for an iPhone, say iPhone 6S or iPhone 6 from three years ago. Get it in good condition. It'll only be about £300, but then it'll give you a really good feel for whether iOS suits you and the Microsoft services. And then after, say, a month, you think, yes, I love this, but I want the very latest and I want to get rid of these bezels. At that point, you're confident enough to spend the money.
Great shout. Yeah, actually, kind of trial it, or if you can borrow a phone from someone, so much the better. But yeah, you're right. That's a great way of doing it, because it's an awfully big investment to make. And the thing to consider there is the iPhone 6S, you'll probably be able to sell for £300 or £290 in a couple of months' time. Whereas if you buy an iPhone 8 or iPhone 10, thank you, Steve, that will immediately start to depreciate in value. Pretty much as soon as you get it out of the box, it will, you know, £100 will drop off straight away. And so, yeah. Secondhand market's a good way to go. That's probably going to be more hassle than some people want to go to. But yeah, it's a great shout. If we're going to have one recommendation, it's going to be try a secondhand one, make sure that's what you want, and then look at whichever one is most sensible for you based on the combination of cost, screen size, and some of the other factors. I mean, because the honest thing here, you know, people will talk about the exciting things on the latest version of the iPhone, you know, be that AR kit, but actually that works on the last couple of models. Kind of the Animoji, which is the talking chicken and the talking poo emoji. honestly, I don't know why you'd need that, but you obviously only get that on the iPhone X. But I will say that Face ID is really impressive. It does just work.
Yeah.
But of course, the other thing is, once you get into these systems, you're not just talking about the phone. You probably will end up buying accessories, whether that's something around a headset, you know, AirPods or the Pixel Buds, you know, maybe something around VR, or you may end up affecting the choice of the computer you end up with. Or certainly, you know, if you decide to get a tablet as well, it does make a lot of sense to have commonality there. If you go into things like smartwatch, it absolutely makes sense there. Even in stuff like smart home, to have, you know, HomeKit compatible stuff on iOS makes more sense. Whereas you'll probably end up with a Google Home, and you know, it's a good reason for that on Google. You know, you can go Chromecast and Apple TV. And so actually, one of the things that's interesting about that kind of decision is it goes beyond just the phone itself. So just be aware that there's a kind of ecosystem dimension to that. And as much as, you know, each of those makes attempts to work on other platforms, particularly the Google stuff will work on iOS, it's not quite the same. It's, you know, just as Microsoft can't quite make itself at home on Android or iOS from that deeper integration, Google Assistant and, you know, Google Home don't work quite as seamlessly within the Mac ecosystem as they do within their home Android ecosystem. So it's another factor to consider there.
Yeah, I'm going to declare, though, overall that the Microsoft experience on Android is better because of the extra integration. Now, I'm going to try and demonstrate that live, Rafe. I've got the Honor 6X in front of me, and this may probably not work, but I'm going to say to it, "Hey, Cortana." Hey, Cortana. Okay, so it doesn't always work. But in theory, I've got into the Cortana settings in the hamburger menu, and I've turned on Hey, Cortana, and it is not working. So that's embarrassing. But in theory, Rafe, this will work. And, of course, you've got the Microsoft launcher. So I'm declaring an Android initially a better fit. But, yes, clearly there's a lot happening on iOS as well. You can probably tell in Rafe's voice and my voice that we're both slightly fighting either a long day and lots of talking, or in my case a slight cold. So we're going to draw a halt there. Thank you for bearing with all this this rambling and slightly off topic for this week. But we will be right back on topic for the next podcast. And I'll say goodbye for now.
It's a goodbye from me as well. Thank you, as ever, for listening. And thank you for Steve for doing the hosting duties and all the great content he puts on the site. Please tune in next time and send in any feedback you've got.